So instead of looking up at the night sky and seeing, you know, just a bunch of burning gas and dead empty space, what if you were actually looking at the glowing indicator lights of a massive distributed server farm?
I mean, it completely changes how you look at reality.
Right. Welcome to today's deep dive. We're jumping into this fascinating stack of theoretical physics and computational notes today, entirely centered around something called the CCTODE framework.
And it is definitely a dense read.
Oh, absolutely. But to cut through all that heavy academic phrasing right away, our mission for this deep dive is to explore this framework that reimagines every single object in the universe, from the rock under your shoe to the supermassive black hole at the center of the galaxy.
Yeah.
Not as physical matter, but as active nodes in a giant cosmic computer.
It's just a complete paradigm shift, really. We are so used to thinking of the universe as a container.
Like a box.
Exactly, like an empty box. You put a rock in the box, and the rock just sits there, being a rock. It's completely passive.
Right.
But this source material maps out, gosh, over 100 different space phenomena to specific mathematical algorithms. It makes the argument that reality isn't a painting you just look at. It's a simulation that has to be continuously rendered.
And that is exactly where I want to start, because my immediate reaction to reading this was, why does a rock or a cloud of space dust need to compute anything at all?
Right. What's the point?
If it's just a chunk of iron floating in the void, what on earth is it calculating?
Well, it's calculating its own physical state. The core insight of this framework is that an object doesn't just exist by default.
Oh, interesting.
Right. To maintain its shape, its temperature, its gravitational pull, it has to constantly resolve uncertainty about itself.
So it's actively working to exist.
Exactly. The fixed physical laws of the universe, you know, gravity, thermodynamics, electromagnetism, those are basically the hard-coded algorithms of the system.
Okay.
But the object itself has to run those algorithms locally just to maintain its own reality.
I'm trying to visualize this. Is it similar to a video game physics engine?
Oh, that's a great way to think about it.
Like, if I'm playing a game, the boulder rolling down a hill isn't actually a boulder. It's a wireframe model that the computer's graphics card has to constantly do math on, right?
Yeah, so it doesn't clip through the ground.
Exactly. So the boulder requires processing power just to exist on my screen.
That is a very accurate way to look at it. In the CCTODE framework, physical objects literally require processing power to exist in reality.
But wait, a graphics card uses electricity from the wall.
Yeah.
What is powering the cosmic boulder? Like, where is it getting the juice to run these calculations?
From its own mass.
From its mass.
Yeah. The framework takes Einstein's famous equation, E equals mc squared, and gives it a purely computational spin.
Okay.
We usually think of mass and energy as interchangeable, right? But here, that mass-energy equivalent acts as a literal compute budget.
Wow.
It translates directly to FLOP's floating point operations per second.
Wait, so you're saying the physical mass of an object dictates how much processing power it has?
Exactly. A pebble has a very small mass, so it has a low compute budget.
Makes sense.
It only has enough processing power to run really basic, low-resolution algorithms just to keep its solid state intact. But a star... A star has a massive amount of energy, which means it has a staggering compute budget. It can run incredibly complex, high-resolution math.
So if mass is processing power, then the stars in the night sky must be, like, the supercomputers of this universe.
They absolutely are.
Which brings us to the first major concept I want to really unpack for you today, which is how stars are actually actively solving complex math problems just to survive.
Yeah, the math is intense.
Because according to these notes, stars aren't just burning balls of gas. They're fighting a constant mathematical war.
They really are. The fundamental problem every star faces is gravity. A star is so massive that its own gravity is constantly trying to crush it into a single point. So to fight that inward crush, the star uses nuclear fusion to create this massive outward push of heat and pressure.
A push and pull.
Exactly. Balancing those two forces, the crush of gravity and the explosion of fusion requires continuous, extraordinary mathematical precision.
And what absolutely blew my mind in these sources is that different types of stars use entirely different types of math to solve this problem.
Yeah, depending on their hardware, basically.
Let's look at our sun.
Yeah.
The framework classifies it as a G-type star and states that it computes piecewise linear fem to survive.
Right.
I need an ELI 5 here. Explain it like I'm 5 for what fem is, because the text gets super dense in this section.
Fair enough. FEM stands for finite element method. It's an engineering technique, actually.
Okay.
Imagine you're trying to calculate the structural stress on a massive curved airplane wing.
Right.
You can't just write one single equation for the whole wing because the shape is way too complicated. So you break the wing down into a 3D mesh made of thousands of tiny, simple triangles or pyramids.
Oh, okay. And those are the finite elements.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. You calculate the simple linear math for each tiny piece individually, and then the computer stitches all those tiny answers together to understand the stress on the whole wing.
Okay, so how is a giant ball of burning gas, like our sun, using an airplane engineering trick?
Because the sun's internal structure is incredibly complex. You have convective plasma boiling up. You've got radiation zones, magnetic fields twisting around.
Right, it's not just a smooth cue ball.
Right. The sun can't balance its gravity with one blanket equation. Hmm. So mathematically, it breaks its own volume down into millions of localized finite elements.
Wow.
It crunches piecewise linear equations for every single tiny pocket of plasma, calculating the exact heat diffusion and structural stress needed in that specific spot.
And then dynamically stitches it all together.
Yes, exactly.
So our sun is basically a distributed computing network, cutting itself into tiny mathematical chunks to keep from collapsing.
Yes, it is furiously rendering millions of localized heat and pressure equations simultaneously.
That is just wild. But then the source material shifts to red dwarfs, which are much smaller, cooler stars.
Right.
And they don't use FEM. The text says they use iterative gradient descent. Mm. Why the change in software?
Well, it comes back to the compute budget. A red dwarf has a fraction of the mass of our sun.
Right. Lower mass, lower budget.
Exactly. It does not have the FLOPs to run high-resolution FEM calculations across millions of tiny plasma grids. But because red dwarfs burn much cooler and slower, they don't really have to process rapid changes.
Okay, so what is iterative gradient descent? How does a lower-budget star actually do the math?
So in human computer science, iterative gradient descent is an algorithm we use in machine learning. It's used to slowly find the lowest possible value of a function.
Okay, give me a visual for that.
Imagine feeling your way down a mountain in the dark by just taking one small step at a time in whatever direction feels like it goes down.
Oh, I see.
Red dwarfs are doing exactly that. They take tiny, iterative mathematical steps over billions of years, slowly rolling toward minimal energy states.
So it's a slow burn.
Yeah, it's a low-energy, highly repetitive calculation that ensures extreme long-term stability without requiring massive processing power up front.
I love that. The red dwarf is basically the budget laptop of the universe, just slowly churning through a background process.
That's a perfect analogy.
But what about the other extreme? The blue giants. These are massive, violent, incredibly hot stars. The framework says they rely on, let me check my notes, high-order polynomial interpolation.
Yeah, so a blue giant has an enormous compute budget, but it also has an incredibly volatile physical state.
Because they burn so hot.
Right. They have massive stellar winds, rapid state transitions, sharp boundaries between different layers of plasma. They don't have time to take slow, iterative steps like a red dwarf.
So they just blow themselves apart.
Exactly. They need to predict and manage massive shifts in pressure instantly. Yeah. So high-order polynomial equations allow the star to draw smooth, continuous curves between rapidly changing data points.
Oh, so it anticipates the changes.
Right. It manages the violent dynamics before they can tear the star apart.
Okay, so the star is constantly trying to balance its math.
Right.
But what happens when the math fails? Because, you know, stars don't live forever.
Right. Eventually they run out of fuel.
I want to talk about supernovas, because the way this framework describes an exploding star completely broke my brain.
Yeah, this part is amazing. The CCT-ODE framework models a type 2 core collapse supernova, not as a physical explosion, but as a fatal mathematical error.
A mathematical error.
Specifically, a singular value decomposition failure.
Okay, stop right there. Singular value decomposition, or SVD, you are going to have to break that down for me. What is actually happening physically, and how does the math map onto it?
Let's start with the math. In linear algebra, SVD is a way of taking a highly complex matrix of numbers and breaking it down to find its fundamental load-bearing dimensions. We call that the rank of the matrix.
Okay.
Think of a physical building. The SVD rank would represent the main steel pillars holding the roof up.
Got it. So the star's matrix rank represents the outward push of fusion that's holding up the weight of gravity.
Exactly. Now, in the math, there is also something called an eigenvalue.
Okay.
In this context, the eigenvalue represents the actual magnitude of the gravitational force pushing down on those pillars. As long as the star has fuel, the pillar at the matrix rank remain intact, and the math balances out.
But when the star finally runs out of nuclear fuel,
the physical outward pressure suddenly vanishes. Computationally, the star's structural matrix rank collapses to zero.
The pillars vanish.
So suddenly, you have a massive eigenvalue, the force of gravity divided by a structural rank of zero.
Oh my God, it's a literal divide by zero error in the star's physics engine.
Yes. The physics engine of the star encounters an unresolvable infinity. Because the structure is zero, the magnitude of the gravitational force mathematically spikes to infinity.
Wow.
The core of the star collapses inward at a quarter of the speed of light. It hits an absolute dense limit, and the entire mathematical error rebounds outward as a supernova.
See, that gives you a completely different appreciation for a supernova.
Doesn't it?
We always picture it as this giant, beautiful cosmic firework.
Hmm.
But under this framework, it is a catastrophic system crash.
Yeah.
It's literally the universe's blue screen of death playing out across light years, all because the star's compute budget finally ran out and it hit a divide by zero error.
That is exactly the way to summarize it.
Which naturally leads us to the second core mission of this deep dive.
Right.
If a supernova is what happens when the structural math collapses, what happens to the remnants?
Right. What's left behind?
Because a core collapse supernova often leaves behind a black hole. And this is where the framework pivots entirely, from stars trying to balance their structure to black holes acting as the ultimate data compression engines.
This is such a crucial pivot. A black hole is no longer fighting gravity. Gravity won.
It's over.
Yeah. So the fundamental problem, the mathematical question the black hole has to solve is completely different. It isn't trying to maintain physical boundaries anymore. It is asking, how do I compress information?
And the sources detail why they do this and how they do this. Let's look at scalar black holes first. The framework maps them using a concept called pole zero computation. What does that actually mean in terms of space?
So pole zero computation comes from complex analysis. A pole is a mathematical point where a function just shoots off to infinity, completely uncontainable.
Okay.
A zero is a point where the function evaluates to absolutely nothing.
Let me guess. The event horizon, the point of no return where not even light can escape, is the pole.
Correct. The gravitational collapse creates an inescapable singularity. So the framework maps the event horizon as the poles, the infinities where standard physics algorithms just completely break down.
And the zeros.
Just outside the event horizon is a ring called the ergor region, where space-time itself is being violently dragged around the black hole. The framework maps this area as the zeros, where competing forces essentially cancel out the normal flow of time and space.
So a stellar black hole is basically an engine constantly calculating the absolute extreme limits of existence, like infinity on the inside, zero on the boundaries.
Yeah.
But it gets even wilder when we scale up. The notes spend a lot of time on supermassive black holes, you know, the monsters at the center of galaxies. The text says these operate as enormous hash functions. Why on earth would a black hole need to hash data?
To answer that, we have to talk about something called the Bekenstein bound.
Okay, what is that?
The Bekenstein bound is an actual established principle in physics that dictates a hard limit on how much information can be stuffed into a specific physical volume.
Oh, like the maximum storage capacity of a hard drive.
Exactly. The universe has a finite pixel density, so to speak. You cannot cram an infinite amount of physical data into a finite space.
Okay, I'm with you.
Now think about a supermassive black hole. Over billions of years, it is swallowing entire solar systems, clouds of gas, millions of stars, light, radiation.
All that stuff has data.
Right. All of that matter contains complex physical information.
So if it just keeps eating whole solar systems, it's eventually going to violate that maximum storage capacity limit.
Exactly. It threatens to overflow the universe's memory buffer. So to prevent a catastrophic violation of the Bekenstein bound, the supermassive black hole has to act as a hash function. In computer science, a hash function takes a massive, varied amount of input data, say a whole encyclopedia, and compresses it down into a fixed-size, randomized string of characters.
So it's an irreversible ZIP file.
Irreversible is the key word there. A black hole takes the incredibly rich, complex history of a collapsed galactic core and crushes it down into pure, randomized entropy on the surface area of its event horizon.
So it hashes the data, so it takes up less space in the universe's hard drive.
Yes.
But wait, I thought physics hated irreversible processes.
Hmm.
Isn't there a rule that says information can never truly be destroyed?
You're thinking of the principle of unitary evolution. And yes, physics demands that processes be reversible.
Right.
You should theoretically always be able to run the math backwards to see how a system started. In computer terms, the universe demands reversible computing.
So we have a huge paradox here. The universe demands that data must be preserved and reversible. But the supermassive black hole is acting as an irreversible hash function just to save storage space.
Mm-hmm.
How does the cosmic computer resolve that conflict?
It fights back using Hawking radiation.
Yeah.
Stephen Hawking theorized that black holes aren't entirely black. They emit tiny amounts of thermal radiation at their edges due to quantum fluctuations.
Okay.
The CCTODE framework interprets this Hawking radiation as probabilistic bit generation.
What does that mean for the data itself?
It means there is a literal computational tug of war happening at the edge of every black hole.
A tug of war?
Yeah. The enormous gravity is desperately trying to hash and compress information downward to avoid breaking the Bekenstein storage limits. But simultaneously, the underlying code of the universe is pushing back, using Hawking radiation to randomly spit bits of data back out into space.
It's trying to save the data.
Exactly. It's desperately trying to satisfy the conservation laws of reversible computing.
That is just incredible. The biggest, most terrifying objects in space are basically just galactic file compressors stuck in an endless loop with a data recovery program.
It really grounds these massive, terrifying concepts into a logic that actually makes sense.
It totally does. Hmm. Now, we've spent a lot of time zoomed out on the deep cosmos here, the furious FEM equations of stars fighting gravity,
yeah,
the hash function compression of black holes.
Yeah, the big stuff.
But a big part of what makes this deep dive so compelling is the scale. If everything is a distributed computational substrate, this has to apply locally too.
Absolutely.
So what is the Earth beneath our feet calculating right now?
Well, Earth's core physical problem isn't fighting off a gravitational singularity or a fusion collapse. Earth is asking, how do I maintain surface conditions?
Okay.
It has to manage tectonic plates shifting, internal magma convection, and the heat radiating out into space.
And what algorithm is it running to do that?
The source outlines it as the spectral element method. Remember how the sun uses FEM to break itself into tiny mathematical chunks?
Yeah, the airplane wing analogy.
Right. The Earth uses a highly specialized, high-resolution variant of that. Because the Earth is made of complex solid crusts and liquid mantles with very sharp boundaries, it needs way higher precision than a ball of gas.
Oh, that makes sense.
So the spectral element method is continuously solving partial differential equations to ensure the surface doesn't boil over or crack entirely into pieces.
So when a volcano erupts or, you know, earthquake happens, that isn't just a random geological event.
In this framework, an earthquake is just a computational output. It is the direct result of the spectral element equations rebalancing the heat and pressure grids inside the mantle.
Okay, I can wrap my head around solid matter computing its state.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to push back on one thing.
Sure.
What about empty space? The vacuum between the Earth and the Moon,
mm-hmm,
or the massive voids between galaxies, there is literally no matter there. Surely nothingness isn't running an algorithm.
You would think so, but the framework argues that even the vacuum is computing. Yeah, and the math behind it is perhaps the most beautiful part of the CCTOD notes. The fundamental question empty space is trying to resolve isn't how do I survive, it is asking what could exist.
Wait, empty space is calculating potential.
Yes. In quantum mechanics, we know that empty space is never truly empty. It is constantly boiling with quantum fluctuations. Virtual particles literally popping into existence for a fraction of a second and then vanishing.
Right.
The framework maps this as quantum amplitude computation.
How does that actually work as a calculation?
It means the vacuum is acting as the ultimate quantum supercomputer. It is maintaining a superposition of all possible states.
Wow.
Instead of calculating one definitive physical object like a rock or a star, the void is continuously running pure parallel computations of every single possibility of what might happen within it.
Man, it really makes human technology look adorable, doesn't it?
It really does.
We build these massive climate-controlled server farms to run basic AI models and simulate tiny virtual worlds.
Yeah.
But according to this source material, the universe is the hardware. The vacuum of space is the parallel processor. The stars are the power supply running structural equations. The black holes are the garbage collection and ZIP files. We are just tiny secondary bits of code running locally inside the Earth server.
It radically changes how you perceive your surroundings.
It's mind-blowing.
The stillness you see when you look at a mountain or a rock isn't a lack of activity. It is the result of millions of equations balancing out perfectly in real time.
Which brings us to the end of our journey today. Let's recap what we've unpacked for you. We explored the CCTODE framework, reimagining reality as a distributed computer where mass is your literal compute budget.
Right.
We dug into the exact mechanisms of how stars survive, with our sun furiously crunching piecewise linear FEM equations to balance heat and gravity, and red dwarf slowly stepping through iterative gradient descent.
And supernovas as a divide-by-zero math error.
Yes. And finally, we saw how supermassive black holes act as cosmic hash functions, irreversibly compressing galactic history to save storage space, while Hawking radiation fights to leak that data back out.
It provides such a unified way to look at both physics and information theory. It just translates abstract cosmic terror into logical, mechanical processes.
But before we sign off, I want to leave you, the listener, with a final lingering thought. Something to mull over on your own that builds directly on the rules we just discussed.
Oh, this is a good one.
The framework clearly states that mass energy equivalence, E equals MC squared, is the universe's compute budget. It is the literal fuel for these calculations.
Right.
But cosmologists tell us that the universe is continuously expanding. And as it expands, its total energy is becoming more and more dispersed. Eventually, trillions of years from now, that energy will become so spread out that it won't be able to do any physical work. Physicists call this the heat death of the universe.
The great freezing out, maximum entropy.
Exactly. So if the mass energy gets too dispersed to do work, does that mean the universe's compute budget eventually drops to zero?
Oh, wow.
If there aren't enough localized FLOPs left to run the quantum amplitude computations of the vacuum or the hash functions of the black holes, will the cosmos simply stop computing its own existence?
That is heavy.
Will reality itself experience a total system shutdown?
A universe that runs out of processing power and just stops rendering.
Just fades to black. Something for you to ponder the next time you're waiting for your laptop to reboot. Thank you for joining us on this custom-tailored deep dive. We hope you walk away with a totally new perspective on the cosmos. Next time you look down at a rock, remember, it isn't just sitting there. It is working overtime, running the numbers, just to stay exactly where it is. Keep questioning the universe around you.